Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is September 13th, 2002. Today's session is The Transforming Role of the Wilderness, Implications of Dying Daily to Live in Christ for Lutheran Culture, presented by Dale Jamgard. You can find this tape under the number JAD2002-05. Let's listen in.
Close your eyes for a moment, please, and think of a neighbor that is unchurched, a family, maybe. And would you be likely to invite them to your church? Or have you? And if not, what were some of the things you considered as you thought about it? Okay, and come back in and would you share some of what came to you as you thought about that?
Their daughter attended our Bible school, and she had a lot of fun except for all that God stuff. Where did she get that idea?
I think just kind of reluctance to get involved in someone else's life.
Okay.
Fear of rejection. What do I say if they say no? I don't want to go. I really don't want to get involved in what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
Okay.
Might end up having to take them and be responsible for them. We had a neighbor who was a retired minister, and he was so good at that. He would tell everybody, you really should come to my church. He put up, we live in a condominium, and he put up invitations on the bulletin board. He was wonderful at it. And I used to be kind of in awe that someone would be able to do that, because I never felt I could.
I was thinking, I'm not sure I know my neighbors well enough to know which ones are churched and which ones are unchurched. And I know part of it is just not having been around much whilst in my working years. And I guess not asking questions either for fear of what I'd find out, I suppose.
And if they would come to your church, how do you think they might react?
I'd be more concerned about how the rest of the congregation reacted.
You'd be more concerned about how the congregation? Okay. In what way?
Well, it's a very small congregation, very close together. And they're not too keen about accepting new people in their midst. Who might criticize them or question them?
Might disturb the status quo. I think our church would probably tend to be more open. We haven't been there all that long ourselves, so we saw that as we came into the church. But they were very welcoming. Try to get everybody involved one way or another.
I asked folks to think of someone that they know in the neighborhood or some family, and what they would think of, what they would be considering if they were considering asking them to come to their church. And if you want to share something that you might think of in that circumstance, please do. I have a very active family, 3 children, a couple doors from me. He's a great guy. He's always ready to help and, you know, willing to do things for anybody in the neighborhood. And the kids are very active in sports and all kinds of other activities. And I thought of asking him to come to church, and one is he had a rather kind of bad experience. The family is traditional Greek, and so the church had a whole culture with it, and some of the culture he was very uncomfortable with, and the church, he just kind of rejected it, felt it didn't really have much to offer him in life. And so I thought, you know, if he comes to our church, or if they would come, we don't have much of a Sunday school, and we have a lot of real young children, but not many children their age. And I thought, you know, the liturgy, the talk, everything, just would be so foreign to them that I think it would be very difficult for them to really tune into it. So the result, I didn't ask them, and I've wondered about that, but and concerned about it.
The people I'm thinking of are very young, and they seem to have it all together. They use their weekends for outings with their family. They don't want to be tied to, well, they don't believe in God to begin with. And I think they have to come to some need before they'll know they're missing anything. And so far, they seem to have no needs, no spiritual needs. They're much younger than we are. John hikes with them, and they've hiked through Holden and felt it was, they just didn't get it.
Ah, okay.
So what can you do? It isn't our responsibility to do anything about that until they have a need.
I asked folks to think of someone unchurched in their neighborhood, and what kinds of thoughts would they be having about whether to invite them and how they might react if they were invited. And
we had a bonfire one evening. Well, bonfire, a little fire and we cooked out. And one of the neighbors I know, I don't think he believes in God. I think his wife was brought up with Catholic religion. But I think sometimes if you just make a suggestion, I was looking up at the sky, and without even thinking, you know, knowing that he didn't have a faith, I says, how can anyone not believe in God when you look up there, see all these stars and the creation, you know? And that's all I said, but I don't know how he took it, but maybe it was just enough to give a little spark. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how they'll react to it. You can't force someone into believing. And Jesus himself didn't. You know, he said, if you believe in me. He didn't say you gotta believe in me. He said, if you will. So he gave us choices. And I think all we can do as Christians is maybe try to give a little spark now and then. How does that song go? They'll know we are Christians by our love, right?
That raises the question. Would they know that we are Christians by our love?
Oh, yeah.
They came to our church.
Yeah. Right. And we all fall short of that.
That's where I want to go with this is, what about the nature of the church?
Is it going far enough?
Is it really, if someone came there, would they really find it a helpful resource? Mm-hmm. Would they find a warm, welcoming community?
One thing our church does, and I think it's a real good outreach, is they have the kids, parents that are working, it's like a school, daycare
program.
I don't know, that's the senior moments I have. Words don't come.
Welcome to the clan.
Yeah. But anyway, it's not just for Luther, it's for the whole community.
Uh-huh.
And they do a real nice job, and we've gotten a lot of comments back. You know, just hearing, being out in the community and hearing what they have to say about it, them not knowing that you even belong to that church. And it's very positive. And I think that's a good way of starting.
That can really say something to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they have to pay. It's not a real high amount. But the church does absorb some of the cost of that.
Okay, well, what I wanted to raise up today is, to what extent are we being the church that we were called to be? And if so, what that is. I hear us often being critical of other churches. They're to this or to that or etc. Or they've got the wrong theology, or they're too emotional, or too this. And so then I'm drawn back immediately to Jesus saying, hey, before you try to take any mote out of someone else's eye, you got to look in your own. And I'm concerned because the statistics are that our church, our Lutheran church, are all of you in a Lutheran church?
I'm Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm. Episcopalian? Okay, it's similar. But in our Lutheran church and in the Episcopal church, the average age of the membership is getting older and older. We're having real difficulty attracting young people. And we're closing churches. Some churches are doing quite well in terms of vitality and gaining members, but a lot of our churches are not actually even keeping up.
I have one thing about it, and I'm wondering whether sometimes, don't you think there's older communities and that more of the elderly are going to church. Now, in our particular case, we have a lot of young families. But it's a young, growing community.
Well, and you have reached out to the young families with your day school.
And that could be good.
And they begin to make a connection, and they begin to get to know people from the church whose children are in the day school. And then often that's how they begin then to feel some sense of fellowship or relationship. And that is a wonderful avenue.
But I know that in areas, where I went to church in Milwaukee, it seemed like there was an awful lot of older people, but it seemed like the older people were the ones that had their homes there and were established in that particular community. And the youth, as soon as they get of age, they're gone, you know. And I thought maybe that's why some of our churches, it seems like, you know, it's fairly elder, that are majority. I don't know if that's the case in all cases. But.
Around our area, a lot of the particularly rural youth end up in the cities, and if the city churches are not going after them, they're lost.
But on a personal level, we have a son who won't go to church. He said, I don't want to go to church and have someone tell me what. Let me rethink this. I don't want to go to church and tell me how I'm supposed to think. And this is a child, you know, went to Sunday school with the whole.
Sure.
I think our church has a real problem with that area between when someone gets married and when their children are old enough to go to Sunday school, then they come back to the church. It's hard to fill that space while young people are getting established in their careers.
How old is your son?
37.
Well, he's getting to where he's probably ready to come back.
He's married. They have no children.
That's the clue.
It's a mixed marriage. We're Lutheran. His wife was a Catholic. Neither one of them has embraced their religion after they've been married. I keep telling them, go somewhere.
You know, it's funny, I married into the Catholic religion, and my wife has fallen away from her church, and I think largely because of the Pope, right? And he's supposed to be infallible as far as the church goes, but when I married her, every Sunday, she was going to church, and that was the way they were brought up. So I started going to my church. Now I go to my church, and she has fallen away from hers. I'm hoping someday that, you know, it's not that she don't believe in God. It's just that she don't like some of the things that are happening in the Catholic Church. And they happen, and I try to explain that to her too, that they happen in all of our churches, not just the Catholic Church. We have a lot that we could, to be desired also in the Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm. But that's the sinful nature of human beings, isn't it? These things that are wrong in our church are because we're sinners. How can we be perfect when we're not ourselves? All we can do is, I think, follow what God has taught us, the Ten Commandments, and it's the way that he wants us to live. And not that we're going to keep those Ten Commandments either, because I think I've disobeyed most of them at times. And at times I follow them. But that's my sinful nature. And because I'm sinful, I got these 5 days or 6 days that I'm walking in this earth, and I'm wandering. And then I go to church on Sunday, and it brings me back on track a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's for me now. I don't know how the rest of the people feel about that, but
well, those are the issues that I think I want to question. My three boys, my one son does go to church some, the other two don't. I have a daughter who is tried to be active in the church and just really questions the relevance of it. Mm-hmm. She's knowledgeable of theology and she would go to church when there were no other young adults in the churches, and she didn't sense much real effort on the part of our Lutheran communities to reach out in any way to the young adults. So it just didn't seem very relevant to her. So anyway, I want to use that to kind of question our church.
I met with a group of young adults. I've been working hard to try to create a young adult fellowship in Portland, and it's been just a very difficult struggle to get any movement going. But anyway, I had a group of four or five of them. We were sitting around and saying how they saw the church and what they really felt needed, what they needed the church to be. Anyway, one fellow said that his girlfriend was real active in the church, and so for her sake, he was going to the church. And so I asked him, you know, how do you experience the church? And he said, well, I kind of enjoy talking to some of the older folks. And but he said, as far as the worship service, he said, I just find nothing that I can connect to. It just doesn't speak to me. And I don't feel any reason to go to it, except my girlfriend's. So,
you know what spoiled church for our kids was coming to Holden. It was so relevant, and it was every day, and they saw all the people that they were with all day, and at communion they went to someone that they had maybe not been very nice to during the week and asked forgiveness, and then they go to a church and they don't feel anything that's real. They all do go to church, but they haven't found what they found here.
I think that sometimes we tend to preach just that every out of the book. And I think sometimes we have to preach and put that to every day. How does that relate today in our lives? You know, Harvey is, I don't know, I think you know Harvey, the guy with the beard. He was my minister for about 7-8 years, but he's really, he's become a very good friend for one, but he brought it down to earth. How does this relate? How can I apply this to my everyday living? And I think sometimes we tend to read the passages out of the Bible, but then that's it. And I think if we can just kind of say, okay, now, and I have a hard time explaining, but Harvey is real good at this. And he brings it down to our everyday living.
Well, let me see if this is, explains it. Just so happened.
He's got it right to the page.
Mark 22. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching, because he taught them as one who had authority. And that word can be also interpreted, one who had power. Not as the teachers of the law. Just then a man in the synagogue who was possessed by an evil spirit cried out, "What do you want of us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," said Jesus sternly. "Come out of him." The evil spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this, a new teaching? And with authority, he even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey."
It's just like when Jesus met Mary Magdalene at the well. She was a prostitute at that time. And everyone said, "You can't talk to people like that." And I don't know, just I can't remember the words that Jesus said, but there was nothing wrong with it in his sight, that he was trying to help her. And But we tend to, I think, want to put ourselves higher than, because we're Christian, than the person that isn't. And I think what we have to remember is we're all God's creatures, and He created all of us.
Okay.
And so we have to be humble, I think. It's easy to say, well, I believe in God, so I'm better than you are. I'm no better. In fact, when I start believing like that, then I might be a little worse.
Okay, so what does it mean to preach with power?
Our pastor has the ability to get inside your head when he preaches, because he puts things into the terms of what we're living with today. He happens to be quite strong before the environment, and as such he gives us, I feel, pretty meaningful examples of how we can nurture the earth and at the same time nurture ourselves.
Okay. So what I hear in that is that he makes it so relevant that you walk out of church needing to deal with that, and that you can walk out of church feeling like you can see things differently, and that you are empowered to do something, that you're changed by. Would that stretch it?
Mm-hmm. Not really.
No.
Okay.
As I said, we've only been there a few years.
Okay.
But it was one of these truly amazing things. When we drive home from church, we were happy instead of arguing or saying, ugh, that didn't talk to me at all. And I guess we're very, very fortunate to have Andrew,
okay,
our pastor.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, but I know what it is.
No.
Not on the other side. That's why I decided, you know, to leave and not go to a building that they call a church. When I was 14, I was looking around this very large congregation of Catholics, and everybody was just sitting there going. And everybody just left.
No socializing after?
And, well, the socializing after basically was coffee and donut, but that was still compulsory. You know, that was what you're supposed to do. And I've been stepping in on a number of different churches in Chelan, and the one right across the street is a Lutheran church. And it gives you something to talk about after, on the drive home.
Okay.
That's what I think. Yeah, you know, the kind of preaching mm-hmm. with power.
We have a minister right now that, and he's fairly young, but he's talking up here. Everything's going over my head. I try real hard to concentrate on what he's trying to tell me, and then all of a sudden my mind starts wandering. And I'm giving myself a sermon rather than listening to what he's trying to give to me. He's using big words, and excuse me, I'm sure most of the kids feel the same. And I think it takes a man that, to get right down to your level. And I was just asked to teach kids over here. oil paint. One thing I was afraid of is that I was going to be taught over their head. And so I asked them not, I didn't want the real young ones because I wasn't sure that I could communicate. So I had maybe the fifth and sixth graders, just three of them. But I was really surprised that these kids were had some of this stuff already, you know. But that was all right. So we were communicating.
We were communicating, yeah. Good.
And I think that's what we have to be afraid of, or aware of, mm-hmm. not afraid of. Mm-hmm. It's all right if you're sitting amongst a group of ministers and you're talking way up here, but the average lay person might not know where you're coming from.
Well, and the person who's brand new to church.
Yes.
You know, what are they hearing?
Right.
We are justified by grace through faith.
Now, wait a minute, where are we?
Huh? And if we say that often enough and with feeling, we are justified by grace through faith. Huh? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I also don't think the most powerful speakers give the best messages.
That's true.
Like, well, thinking of, I hope I don't step on any toes, but Robert Schuller is a powerful speaker, but he certainly doesn't speak to me.
Hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. In what way doesn't he?
I guess I don't hear the message of grace in what he talks about. I don't listen to him anymore because it isn't my thing, but he comes to mind when you talk about a powerful speaker.
I thought Billy Graham was a pretty good speaker. Now, whether he spoke everything that I believe, I'm not sure. But, and I don't listen to him very often. In fact, I don't think he's around. He's around yet, but I'm not preaching too much.
Nice.
But I thought he was a fairly powerful speaker. A few times I listened to him.
Okay, I want to take this in a little different direction, just to give it another perspective. Some of you who may have been with me a little through the week know that what I've just defined as the essence of sin is the attempt to prove our significance. And I base it on, I'm going to just quickly review it for those who haven't been involved in it so you kind of get an idea what I'm talking about. The temptations of Jesus start with, if you are the Son of God, which essentially sends the message, be afraid, you're nobody. They have a deep sense of, maybe I'm not enough, maybe I'm not somebody, maybe I'm not important. And then the devil gives him three ways that he can prove that he's somebody. You can prove who you are by what you do, turn stones to bread. You can prove who you are by the response you get from others, jump off the pinnacle, get God to send his angels to take care of you. You can prove who you are by your positions and your possessions, bow down to me and I'll give you dominion over all the earth. And so my thesis is that what we do as individuals, and Paul talks about this old self, Jesus talks about it, that we create an identity. We get the idea that if I'm just these things, then I will be important. And so we create a somebody and then try to make that somebody work in our lives. We try to do the things that make us important, get the response from others, go after the positions and the possessions that we think are going to make us significant. And that becomes what is called an old self. We are enslaved to that dance that we've created. We're enslaved to the need to somehow keep doing that enough to make ourselves significant. And we're capable of very disastrous things when that somebody gets threatened. If we can't do all the things we used to think we needed to do, somehow we're devastated. And a wonderful movie on that is called Water Dance. And it's a story of a guy who becomes paraplegic and goes into a ward of other paraplegics. And they all, you see them trying to find some way to prove their worth. And here they can't walk and they can't function sexually and so forth. And their manhood is devastated. And finally a guy describes it. He said, it's like I'm dancing on water. And if I stop dancing, I'm going to sink. And that, to me, is a wonderful illustration of what I think sin is about. That we're enslaved to this dance. And often, it is our strengths that become our idolatries. In other words, the example I shared with you, I thought if I was just responsible enough for everything, well, I was good at being responsible. That was one of the best things I knew how to do. So it was my strength, but it became my idolatry when I thought I could prove I was significant by being responsible enough. And so often it's persons, if they're smart, it becomes their identity. If they are popular, well, it becomes their identity and they become dependent on it. So often it's our very strengths that we build this significance around and we become dependent on. Now, and then Jesus is clear. He says, he who finds his life, he whose dance or somebody succeeds pretty well, will lose his life. And he who loses his life for my sake will find it. And so he says, come die with me. That old self that you think you have to have, all the things you think you need to be significant, die with me so you can realize you can lose all the things you're hanging on to or attached to, or different language. You can lose it all and know who you are by the grace of God. That your significance, your worth, your identity is all gift. It's nothing you can prove. And so when you kind of let go and sink into that, that's what's called the deep peace that passes understanding. Wow. I am who I am by the grace of God. And that then is the freeing word that says, wow, I can do what I do, not because I have to prove anything, but because I am somebody by the grace of God. I'm set free from that enslavement. And that's how Paul talks about it. That old self dies with Christ and we rise to a new self, a new life in Christ. That is set free to the experiencing the tremendous energies, capacities, visions that we have as human beings. And that's why Jesus says, and therefore greater things than I do can you do. Far more is possible than you can imagine. Open up. So anyway, that's what, for me, the cross and the resurrection is about for we as individuals, and that's what sin is about, and that's what being set free. When Jesus says, I came that you might have life, that you might come alive and have it abundantly. Now, the point I would like to come to today is that institutions, just like individuals, have a personality. And they start out with their strengths. And there's a time of real aliveness, and wow, things click, there's energy, there's interest, it's attractive, people come, say, wow, there's something going on here that's real, that's exciting. And then we begin to use our strengths as an institution to prove our worth. We are the best because... And so I want to say to our Lutheran church, we talk about the need to die in order to live. What does that mean for an institution? What are some of our strengths that we may be turning into idolatries that are having a deadening effect?
What would you think of?
I can think of something right off the bat. We're in the process of building a church. Well, we have the church, and it was just a metal building with a flat roof, and we sat in chairs similar to this, and it was well used. And we added on a few years back and put some classrooms in. And now there's a lot of people that want the traditional church with the pews and the, and I'm on the building committee. Being a bricklayer, I thought I should be on. And all of a sudden they're talking about spending $1,200,000, $1,800, somewhere in that vicinity. And I'm saying, are we going to be helping the church by doing this? Or are we going to be chasing some people away that feel as though they can't afford to make the commitments that we're going to have to make in order to build this church? I said, I don't need a glass cathedral to worship God in. But I said, maybe I'm missing, there's a lot of young people, like I said, maybe I'm one of the older ones sitting on this building committee, I said, and maybe I'm underestimating you, that you're making a lot more money than I think you're making, because to pay for this thing, it's going to take some money. I said, I'm on a fixed income, and I don't have a real lot that I can donate, you know, to the church, but I would hate to see us chase some people away that are in the same, you won't chase me away, but there might be some that would say, well, boy, I can't afford this and I don't want to look like a cheapie, you know. So all of a sudden the guilt thing that you talked about, or the position, this has a lot to do with it too. There's some that would like to get the names on the pews and, you know, and I'm not for that, but these are some of the things
I hear you raising that question of the potential resource that we have. If we're going to put 70%, 80% of that resource into a building, is that the priority? Yeah. Is that what it means to be the church?
Well, see, our church hasn't grown a real lot recently, and they feel as though if they have this church with the pews and that that'll draw them, well, then they're joining for the wrong reason to start with it.
Okay. Well, and we certainly have lots of grand cathedrals in Europe that are practically empty.
Yeah. Even in the bigger cities, like Milwaukee, I know, has some big churches where all the people start moving out of the cities, you know.
Sure.
The poorer people are in the center and they can't really afford to keep these buildings up anymore.
Okay, what other thoughts? What do you sense are the strengths of our Lutheran Church, and can you see any way that they may be, that we may be misusing them?
Our church's great strength is its music. And a lot of people come for that music, and sometimes I wonder if they're there just to be entertained. They aren't taking part in the music, and there aren't other things that they're taking part in. Is it a trap?
Okay.
We have a community church in our village, and it's growing real rapid. In fact, some of the people that we had in our church have gone, changed to community church because their kids liked community church, because there were music, they had instrument playing, and a lot of entertainment in their services also. I don't know if that's good or if it's not.
Okay.
But it is growing.
Mm-hmm. And so they do things differently.
Yes. I'm not sure.
Other thoughts?
I go to church, excuse me.
Dive in.
I don't go to church because of the church. I go to have communion with other people in a community way, to pray and praise to the Lord. I don't go because of the minister, because the minister's going to be there. Mm-hmm. I've gotten caught in that trap when, and then they're gone, and then you grieve, or they die. That happened. I go for my own.
Okay.
Communion.
That's why I haven't left the church, because
right.
The minister I don't think is that I have too much in common with him, but that's not why I go, because of the minister. Yeah. I feel the same way.
But if you want to know the truth, back to the first question, it's much easier for me to take somebody to Al-Anon than it is to take to church.
That's true. There's
way easier to take somebody's what?
To Al-Anon.
Oh, okay.
Than to church.
Because I know what the response will be.
And you also
you know the welcome they'll
get. Yeah, I know what their need is.
Wow. Wow.
That's a good point.
Well, there's this is the kind, I think, of self-examination that we need to do as a church. For instance, I see our theology as one of our great strengths. And yet, because we put so much emphasis on it, I mentioned this yesterday, that we tend to think that the way to communicate this theology is by preaching and teaching. All we need to do is tell them what the theology is, and then they will understand it, and then they will be moved, and then they will be changed. And it often doesn't happen that way. I think we might find it interesting, but often I think we get the concepts from here up and somehow they don't get down deep. Grace in its fullness is a whole body-shaping experience. It reverberates through us. Grace from here up is a wonderful idea and kind of has a good feel to it or a good ring to it. But often it doesn't reverberate.
I was gonna chime in with theology as being perhaps the idol of not only the Lutheran Church, but liberal Protestant churches. I mean, typically, I think. But what I wanted to say was the message that we're trying to give people from theology is so counter to every. I'll just say it, yeah, to everything our culture reinforces in us. You know, the idea of grace, the idea of not being, your identity is not, or don't mistake your identity for your abilities or your possessions or whatever, is radically different than the message we're getting from our culture. So, To give somebody that idea once a week, in a setting that is quite different from the rest of their life, rather than having it something that you do with your entire body and your entire way of life, and showing people rather than just the concept, but actually giving people an opportunity to live in that way, it seems like you're going to have to create an alternative community or something like that is separate enough from the constant bombardment of you are this, you are that, you are that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So different from our regular society, right?
Right.
That it's hard.
And I think, you know, in Acts,
you know, in the early chapters of Acts, you do see, you know, the apostles living in a way that's radically different than we carry on as church institutions, you know, sharing their wealth. You know, some of those early churches seem quite different than the churches we have today.
Yeah, yeah, we talked some about that yesterday.
Okay.
But it's very relevant right here. You know, it talks about them confessing their sins to one another and declaring forgiveness to each other, being real with each other. This is who I am, and this is what I'm dealing with. And then the gifts were gifts of wisdom and knowledge and miracles and healing and prophecy and you know, kind of right out on the edge of what people can do. These gifts were part of that cauldron of creativity. Mm-hmm. But if we're not really talking to each other, and if we're, as you beautifully said, we're all looking okay, then there's not much chance for that kind of stuff to happen.
Right.
Now, just a couple more things. I've gone to pastoral conferences where we have used our theology to kind of critique others and cut them to shreds is another term I use for it. And we can be so critical because they don't have the theology. You hear, for instance, just as we refer to the theology of glory, we can be so critical about it. And yet, there are aspects to the theology of glory that are important. There is this new life. There is the movement of the Holy Spirit. There are changed lives. There, you know, there is that aspect. But when we are critical of it, and then say, well, we've got a theology of the cross, but people don't have much of a sense of confession or going to the cross or dying to live in that kind of language. It's like they're all slogans. And they are like what Jesus, the speakers who would have referred to them as speakers of the law, that there are words and slogans, and if we just say them, it's going to happen, but they are without power. That we hear them and say, ho-hum. And so I often ask people, one of the tests, when you go out of church, are you higher energy or lower energy? And I often experience myself and have gotten the answer, I'm ready to leave when the service is over. I'm lower energy than when I went in. And I say, that's got to be a clue to something. Also, with our liturgy, I think liturgies are great, but if we don't have more, one church I visited had a lot of group life. To be a member of the church, you had to be a member of a group. And so they said, what we do on Sunday morning is celebrating what has been happening all week. And I think our Lutheran sense is it all happens on Sunday morning within that 1 hour. That's it. And
just mind-boggling me to drive through town and it, on the way to church and see all of these cars and people and parking lots full, and then at about 11:30 they're empty.
Yeah,
just nothing there
for the rest of the week.
Yeah. So let me invite you to close your eyes for just a moment, and the power of the Spirit of Christ, the nature, the essence, the concern, the hope of Christ is with you. And you have a magic wand, the wand of the Spirit. What
would you like to see happening in the church? Create what you would want to have happen. Just imagine what that would be like. Okay, now, everything was possible in this. There are no limits to the Spirit, so you could create anything you wanted. What are some of the images that came to you? What does the church look like in your imaging?
That I wanted it to look like.
Yes, that's what, yeah.
Happy, vibrant community of people that it wasn't just Sunday that this was happening. It could happen throughout the week.
Okay, what are they doing?
Celebrating life. And I don't mean drinking and living it up.